It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, I want to talk to you about the concept of going down fighting.
Going down fighting?
Yes. You are trapped in an alleyway. All the zombies are coming down. You're out of ammo. You're in a little hut and the entire Bolivian army is outside and they're not taking prisoners. You broke your leg and all the bikers are going to come kill you or whatever. People are always like, I'm going to go down fighting. I'm going to take some with me. I'm going to, like, when it's guaranteed that they're going to fight it anyway, they're like, oh, you know. And I get it on a revenge level. If you're like, I'm angry at whatever is coming at me, so I want to possibly hurt or kill some of them as sort of payment for my death. I'm not saying I believe that, but I understand that. There seems to be this general idea that it's better to go out, you know, fighting in general, fighting a good fight. And I'm very much the other side. I'm like, if you know you're gonna lose, like, have a little fucking dignity and just relax, you know? Don't get me wrong. If there's a Hail Mary possibility of success, I'm there. But in these situations where it's like, no chance. I'm like, no, why would I keep fighting?
You think the fighting is undignified?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's a little, because it's pointless. I mostly just think it's not how I want to spend my last few moments. I'd be like, no, be calm, you know, reflect, that kind of thing. I don't know. What do you, how's your take on it? This is why I ask.
Well, I mean, in a general sense, I feel like it's really just a matter of personal preference, you know. I mean,
I guess I'm asking you your personal preference.
I can understand a person feeling like that they would, you know, they would rather their last moments be fighting than not. For me,
Klingons, maybe.
I mean, I know that this is going to sound dumb probably, but it probably depends on the circumstance, actually.
I mean, I walked into this asking you a hypothetical question in which you needed to make a decision. So, I mean, it's on me. I understand.
For example, zombies?
Let's do the zombie one.
Zombies.
You're in an alleyway. It's dead end. You're out of ammo. There's just a ton of them. You've already seen, they just eat everybody. Like, that's their deal.
Yeah, this is a situation where, you know, I would probably be very careful not to run out of ammo, so I had one saved for me.
Well, you know what? Adrenaline was pumping and you missed count. Jesus Christ, come on.
There's got to be a way where I could take care of myself. You know, take myself out, not wait for them to do so.
All right, never mind then.
That's probably what I would do in that situation.
Let's say for weird hypotheticals that wasn't available, like the question I originally asked you. Just for funds. God. You ever played those icebreaker party games? I'm guessing no, because if you ever were at a party where that happened, you would be kicked out the door so fast.
I pretty much don't get invited to parties unless people know me. In which case,
then they should be prepared.
Exactly. And I'm not really invited to play those games.
I mean,
I'm just being honest. I don't mean to be a pet, or I don't know what it, I don't mean to annoy people. I'm being honest,
as soon as there's a zombie apocalypse and I get my hand on a gun, I'm killing myself. So this situation never comes up for me either. That's not the point. Hypothetically, I know as hard as it is to understand, in this zombie apocalypse, the logistics of this very rational situation have made it such that you are stuck somewhere with no way to murder yourself.
I don't know. I don't know what I would do.
Okay, given that, and I accept that answer, except for the fact that somehow you do know what you'd do if you still had a bullet. Never going to happen. So it's really weird that you know the answer to one of them and not the other. Well,
it's because you're treating this like this is a unique hypothetical that doesn't belong in a category with other things, but it does. Like, for example, let's say it's not zombies. Let's say it's some people who are going to torture me to get information about people I want to protect. I would find some way to kill myself in that situation also, because I would not trust myself to not crack and give away information about people who they would then go after. I don't want to be a source of information, so I would find a way to take my own life. So there's a whole category of situations.
Absolutely. And in all of those, we could say, what if circumstances were such that you couldn't do that?
Well, that's just hard to imagine.
You have an incredibly discreet imagination. The shit you can imagine and can't follows a pattern. I have no
concept. So when people answer these kinds of questions, do they not imagine themselves in the situation to come up with their answer?
They do, in fact.
Okay, well.
And when I say, and also you have no way of killing yourself, they imagine themselves in a situation where they can't do that.
And I have a hard time imagining that.
You don't have a hard time imagining yourself in the situation other than that. You don't have a hard time imagining the zombies or the people who want to torture you. Which, again, all things that are never going to happen to you. You have no problem imagining that. But the idea that then you don't have the means to kill yourself, that's the limit of your ability to imagine. I can picture all of this shit until I am unable to commit suicide. That's just beyond my comprehension.
It's hard for me to imagine that situation.
It's so weird.
What? Why?
Because it's such a weird, arbitrary point for your imagination to suddenly fail.
Arbitrary?
Yeah.
I don't see how it's arbitrary. I mean,
how is it not arbitrary? I mean, it's just
committing
one
suicide,
factor out of this hypothetical.
Because committing suicide is really easy. I mean, it's really hard for, like, if someone is suicidal and they are committed in an institution, they've got to go to great lengths to figure, you know, to put the person in a situation, if they're very committed to killing themselves, a situation where that's impossible to happen. It's really hard. And unless I'm in that kind of place, there'd have to be ways I could slit my wrists, or that I could, you know, drink some bleach, or, I mean, there'd have to be a way. That's hard, you know.
I guess you ran down an alleyway. You didn't know it was a dead end. You miscounted your bullets. You've got about 2 minutes. So are you like sawing at your arm with the lid of a trash can? I mean,
I don't know.
So slitting your wrist would not be fast enough with the zombies coming. It just seems really weird. I can imagine if I could fly. I sure as hell can imagine if I was in a situation where I was not able to commit suicide. I mean, hell, okay, do this. You're in an institution and they've gone to the great lengths to make sure you can't. And then zombies show up.
Well, in that case, I'm probably strapped down or whatever, and there I don't have a choice but to just find a way to sort of you know, be at peace with it and you know, meditate for a little while before the worst happens. I wouldn't really have an option in that case to fight back.
This is a learning experience for me.
What do you mean?
To my knowledge, I've never met anyone who has, in my years of knowing you, a vivid and creative imagination, and yet has these really hard limits where suddenly, oh, I can't picture that. I can't imagine that situation.
What?
Which is so weird to me. I mean, it's not a thing that's going to hurt you in life, so that's fine.
I mean, I imagine if I had some time and could really think about it, I could maybe, but just you asking me off the top of my head, that's a difficult thing to imagine.
I promise you, if you come up with a situation right now, the weirdest, hardest to imagine thing, and ask me what I do, I can answer you 5 seconds. Maybe this thing again. You do understand there's nothing riding on your answer.
Yeah. Do you understand that?
Yeah, but then why is it impossible for you to answer?
Why does it matter how hard it is for me to answer?
Because again, I've never encountered another human being who has this difficulty.
Okay.
I find it interesting. I mean, don't get me wrong. We'll finish this without you answering, and I'm fine. I've literally, I'll put it this way. My imagination can't picture somebody whose imagination can't handle this. I'm seeing him.
It seems to bother you a little bit, though.
I think it does, because I'm all about imagination. And what you're expressing not only scares me a little bit, I would hate imagining myself being in that situation. Genuinely, like, makes me uncomfortable. And I think on a weird sort of level, it seems very sacrilegious to me. Like, I don't know. I think part of my brain thinks it's a deliberate thing on your point. I think you are capable of answering the question, but not in a way that suits you. So part of me sort of rejecting is that, but mostly it just freaks me out. The idea that the shit, like, I can't even imagine.
Well, like, no, I said it's hard to imagine. Yeah. Like I said, maybe if I had some time, I could figure it out. But it's not really like you're imagining it. You're not filling in all the details of the situation. You're just deciding that those details don't matter. So you're not really imagining something that I'm not imagining. I just, before I answer, would like to be able to imagine something that you can just skip over imagining.
Okay. So would you be willing to do the thing you think I'm doing?
Well, now that's a good question.
When I asked the question, I guess that's what I was asking, is for you to do whatever it is you think I'm doing. I guess that ultimately that is what I was asking. And I'll be honest, probably what most people ask when they ask these kind of hypothetical
questions. Sure, but but the thing is, I'm not really in the habit of skipping it over. I mean, I think I know people do that.
But that's the point of them asking.
Sure, sure.
That they're definitely not looking for the answer where you say,
no,
I couldn't decide. I'd have to think along.
I get it. I get it. But to me,
this is the thing. It bothers me because I think it bothers you.
That I
can't. I think what we're establishing here is that you can do it, but for some reason you very much don't want to. And when this is a situation where I'm just making conversation, it seems weird that you're like, rather than have this go smoothly and we can move on, I'm going to choose not to.
But I honestly don't know what to say. I'm not making it up. I'm not just being difficult.
So you couldn't do what I have done in the situation.
Or at least
you don't know how at this point.
It's not my habit to do it. I don't even remember, like, in my life doing that. It's just my habit is when a person asks me a question of that kind is for my brain to go a certain way. I understand what other people are doing. But I don't even...
What other people are really requesting of you when they ask.
But like... But
you've decided to keep with the habit that sort of leaves them unsatisfied.
That's not my goal. I just...
No, I'm that's what I'm trying to figure out then.
Look, I don't...
I apologize. This comes off attacky, but at this point, I genuinely am just curious because I genuinely don't know what your thought process is,
and
it's
very
different of mine.
So. Right, and I don't know what your and most other people, I will grant, I don't know what their thought process is. I mean, I just characterize it as skipping over the details to reach a conclusion.
I think that's fairly accurate. I think that is fairly accurate. Because okay, when somebody describes the situation, I'm ignoring extraneous details because that's not what they're asking about.
But then how do you know which thing to say? How do you know without the details which thing? Are you just picking one randomly? How do you know?
Okay, in this case specifically, like if you ask me this, I'm not so much excluding details as taking the questioner at their word. The questioner told me, I'm definitely going to die, and I have no chance of getting out of that.
Okay.
So that's all the details that matter.
Right. You're right. And I understand that.
So I'm using those and saying, and don't get me wrong, there's a 50% chance that were I in such a situation, I'm totally wrong about what I would do. Because how can you know? You know, really? How could you possibly know? Oh, I'm about to die and just like decide already. So, I mean, definitely do not hold me to this when the zombies arrive.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously the problem is, and it's not an issue of not taking the person at their word either, because it's like,
No. And I believe you hear and understand everything. And like I said, I think you're on the right track. So if you don't do that by habit, but believe you could do that and understand that every time people have asked you these kind of things, that's what they're looking for. The question becomes, why do you then not?
Because I need to
have a reason to do something and not a reason not to do something kind of thing?
Well, I mean, that's sure, but that's part of it being a habit, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't have to, you know, I can understand that this is an exempt situation and whatever. Mm-hmm. The problem is it feels false, right? It feels like I'm not, I mean, to me, it would feel like I'm just giving whatever answer comes to me randomly, or maybe I'm picking it because I think it'll be humorous or whatever. And those aren't good enough reasons for me. It feels like I need to.
As the questioner, I'm happy to say those are absolutely good enough reasons for you.
I know that, but they're not good enough for me.
So it becomes a personal ethical thing.
Kind of.
You know that I'm, even being aware that you just randomly picked it, I would be satisfied with that.
Yes, I know that. Yes.
And yet you still wouldn't, because it feels essentially unethical to you or dishonest to you.
It feels dishonest. Yeah. It feels inauthentic, and it feels performative, you know, it feels fake.
100%. I think performative is a very key word in this kind of situation.
Yeah.
This is interesting because you are totally capable of lying. Not in a serious way where people believe you.
No,
you're
right.
Totally capable of like for the moment, like as a joke or for a bit or whatever.
Yeah.
To me, essentially, that's what this kind of question is. It's a party game.
Yeah. Because
again, it doesn't matter. And because it doesn't matter, honesty doesn't matter in this.
No, all right. That's right. And what makes me willing to do a bit sometimes, you know, which obviously I'm willing to do sometimes,
yeah. And
not others. I don't know.
I accept that answer, but I think it is very, I think this is interesting. I think this is something that is deserving of reflection on your part.
Well, I think in this case,
I think the answer could be interesting to you.
I think a lot of times, I don't know, but I'm going to hazard a guess that a lot of times when these questions are asked, it depends on how seriously I'm taking the question. personally.
Sure.
No. But what I mean is, when you ask this question about going down fighting, whether or not I take it in a lighthearted way and respond with a bit or with being whatever.
Flippant, yeah.
Yeah, it depends on, it's like, okay. It's like there's two parts of me all the time hearing these things and weighing them. And one just wants to make a joke out of everything, believe it or not. And the other wants to think about things like seriously. So I think sometimes, like with this question, the serious part of me thought, that's actually a really good question. What would you do in a situation like that? And it's just took the whole thing very seriously and analytically. And the part that would normally make a joke out of it just got overruled.
Okay. So, you know, it's not an important question to me. Important's not the right word. But intriguing, serious question to you. Yeah. And therefore...
That's right.
I know it sounds dumb because we're focusing on the zombies, but as you pointed out, it's an example.
Yeah, yeah.
So to you, on a certain level, it is a question of some, I guess, profundity or interest.
Yeah.
And therefore, you respect it academically to the degree that you don't want to be.
That's right.
See, now you're laughing, but I'm not actually making fun of you. No, this is my serious
experience. I know, but this is what I mean. There, when sometimes I take things seriously and sometimes I don't. It's just a matter of those two sides of me sort of fighting it out, and whoever wins.
But sometimes it matters. It can matter to you intellectually.
Yeah.
Even if you know practically it doesn't matter.
That's right.
If it matters to you, you want to give it full, honest answer, and you run against issues. Okay. No. I think this makes sense. I understand this now.
Now the next.
I still question, don't know that I've run into anybody else like this. I should rephrase. I probably know people who feel that way, but I think they cave to peer pressure and they just give the glib answer anyway.
Okay. See, that's what I was going to say next. The next question is, well, when you're in a social situation or where you're in a podcast, why can't that analytical, intellectual person understand, hey, don't take it so seriously? And sometimes I think that can happen, and then the funny one can win.
Yeah.
Sometimes the intellectual is just too fascinated by the question, and it just overwhelms the system, and that's how I'm answering.
Well, and in this case, I don't find it weird, because it's that, again, the thing of reason to do something versus a reason not to do it or whatever. Like, you probably guessed that your answer to this would make me go off, but you probably didn't think like it would harm our friendship or anything for you not to answer this, which is accurate. I think I am fine with the idea that you are honest to your own feelings in this and didn't just cave to peer pressure. As much as I love watching you cave to peer pressure, like, I get that this is not a circumstance. You're not at a cocktail party nervous about what people are going to think of you. It's me. Ultimately, as you always say off camera, when it comes down to it, fuck Tony and whatever he thinks. You always have said
and
I respect that. I feel like that's a good.
Oh, yeah, that sounds just like me.
And I really wish I could make that the title of this episode.
I think, though, as a rule, I'm kind of with you, though. I mean, I think the only reason I would go down fighting is if I thought it served some purpose, like it was going to help someone else get away, or it was going to make some kind of point or be some kind of gesture. Outside of that, I would probably be very much like you and want my last moments to be as serene as possible.
The reason it came up is there's a song I was listening to recently that's all about, if it's the end of the world, I'm going down fighting. And I'm like, people do that. That's why zombies stick out. Every zombie movie, at some point, one of the side characters is injured and is given like a bomb or the last shotgun or whatever. And they just have to sit there and they'll cover everyone else before they leave. And like, I get that. At a certain point, if you're just doing it for the sake of doing it, I'm like, I don't feel like that's how I would want to die. I feel like I would want to pause and be reflective.
I think I agree with that mostly. I think I agree with that mostly. There, I'd have to have, it would have to serve some purpose for me to, because I wouldn't feel, it wouldn't serve me. I wouldn't feel better about myself that I was fighting on the way down.
I think that's kind of my thing. This probably goes into the whole thing, how you and I don't really buy into honor and shit too. So yeah. This is probably, this, cause there's probably honor in going down as a fighter or whatever. I will tell you though, the fact that we went through all of this, and then you legit did answer my question just now. Now I'm mad at you and it's going to harm our friendship. You drug me through all the rest of that shit just to do it.
I worked through it. I told you if I talked about it. I
genuinely think you did it just to drive me crazy.
No.
You're like, psych, look, all that was bullshit. Would totally not do it.
No, no. Look, if I knew that would work, I would do it, but I'm not that smart, so.
Oh, fun times. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Thigh Gap Podcast. The only podcast that started with a 20-minute argument over what you'd do if zombies showed up, just to try and simulate the joy that is family Thanksgiving. That's, you know, you're gonna have arguments that are just as stupid during the holiday, so we thought we'd bring it home for you here. This was all pre-staged. We wrote it out. We've got scripts.
Whole thing. Yeah, it's pretty good too. I think we did a good job.
Yeah, it was nice. I like that we got resolution. Like, because that's not happening at Thanksgiving. Warning to all of you. Sorry, that was just for narrative purposes. Do not expect your conversations with your relatives to end with some sort of understanding.
Yeah, I wouldn't attempt this at home.
Yes. If you want to end it there, you just say, yeah, but it's good gravy. And then everybody can agree on that. And then you're fine.
Even if there isn't, even if there isn't gravy, by the way.
There isn't gravy. It's not Thanksgiving. Some bullshit.
Did you say you're Tony?
I am Tony.
Oh, and I'm William. And this is episode 506, mm-hmm. Our 10th annual Thanksgiving episode.
Thanksgiving episode. So you know what that means, everybody. Gather all your relatives around the MP3 player or whatever you listen to it on, and you all can enjoy. Like, they've already stopped listening because they're all fighting over how they would handle the zombie Oblivion Army situation.
No, they're not fighting because they don't have the hangups that I have about hypothetical.
Now, some of them have your back. I would be really curious to see how Team William, Team Tony plays out amongst the listeners. And again, I'm sure most of them like both of us or hate both of us. Like, if you had to pick, I wonder how that... You should figure out how to do a poll on the blog. See what happens.
I don't know. I mean, I've pretty much in my...
Producer my just said that's Sophie's choice.
In my life, I've mostly run into people who are get annoyed with me like you do. I mean, I don't know too many people that get hung up like I do on these things.
The producer just reminded me of something to say to make fun of her, so I'm going to do that now.
Oh.
So there's this movie coming out, Let Them All Talk or whatever. I don't know. It's got Meryl Streep in it. Trish was telling me about it, and she forgot Meryl Streep's name, which happened. That's a thing. You know, you lose a word, you lose a name, whatever. She knew that I knew her, of course, because she's been in everything or whatever. And what she came up with for her clue to tell me was the woman who played the mom in the woman from the first Mamma Mia film. She plays the mom, and apparently she's not in the second. I don't know. But I was like, Meryl Streep is going to punch you in the face. Meryl Streep's illustrious career, you come up with the first Mamma Mia instead of, and then I draw a blank. I'm like, shit. Well, she was in that stupid thing with Alec Baldwin, but that's not good either. I'm like, Kramer versus Kramer. That's a good one there. There we go. All right. There's something. It was like Steel Magnolias, which turns out she's not in Steel Magnolias. But then Trish can't take it anymore, so she goes to IMDb.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, Sophie's Choice. And I'm like, we're a couple of assholes. Went with Mamma Mia and 2017's It's Complicated, starring Alec Baldwin. And we fucking forgot Sophie's Choice. Like, we owe Meryl Streep such an apology.
That's good.
Also, she wasn't in Steel Magnolias. She was like the only... There's a group of like distinguished female actors. She was like the only one who wasn't in Steel Magnolias. No, actually, and then later I found out I was thinking of Dolly Parton. And so now I owe both of them apologies.
Wow.
Although Dolly Parton might not be insulted to be mixed up with Meryl Streep, I suppose. Our worst thing.
There is another actor I always get Meryl Streep mixed up with, and it's but I don't remember who it is, but it happens all the time. Next time it happens, I'll awfully
sure. Diane Lane?
No.
I have a hard time thinking of other ones. I mean, as the idiot who thought of Dolly Parton.
Meryl Streep.
And, she's
Glenn Close. Glenn Close.
No, that totally makes sense. That makes sense.
Meryl Streep and Glenn Close. I always like think one's in the other's movies and stuff. I always do.
There are some, and the casting director, if they're like, we can't get one, they would go to the next one. There are ones like yeah. that. Recently, Andy McDowell and Mary Steenburgen are kind of.
Yes. Like yes. I think I sometimes mix them up too.
It's not uncommon. They were cast in very similar roles. And their sort of peak was at the same time. Glenn Close, Meryl Streep is a good one. Although nowadays it's bad because Meryl Streep still always has her long blonde hair. And Glenn Close lately seems to be in a lot of roles where she has incredibly close cropped hair and looks very androgynous. And he's usually a bad guy. He's been doing a lot of those. It's weird. Anyway, for those of you just joining us, happy Thanksgiving. Here's how the show works. I'm gonna do another fast one. TheMagicalTalkingHead@gmail.com. TheMagicalTalkingHead.com. Which is most of it.
Wow.
New record.
I couldn't even. I'm going to have to slow it down just to hear what you said.
Yeah, I got all the bits. I added some flourishes in there, too.
That's amazing.
You do have to slow it down.
Yeah,
slow it down. It's our 10th Thanksgiving episode. It doesn't seem like... It's a weird time to be schooling people on what this is, you know?
Kind of.
Also, this is it right here. What you're seeing, that's it. So... Now, follow me on this. I'm going to ask how your week was.
Yeah.
But really, I'm just curious how the last 4 days or so were. was your week, William?
We finished watching those two seasons of The Crown we hadn't seen.
Yeah.
And when I watched the last... podcast episode, you mentioned how you weren't really that interested in the royal family, which I didn't mention this, but I think we have talked about this before, because I think we got a question in the hat. One of our UK listeners asked why Americans are so fascinated with the royal family, and we didn't know because neither of us have ever been fascinated with the royal family.
Have you flipped? Are you now fascinated with the royal family?
No, that was the reason we started watching The Crown in the first place. Was because of Claire Foy. We just wanted to see, her. Yeah. We wanted to see how she was.
Where did you know her from before this? Because I had never heard of her until this.
It's funny you should ask that, because I couldn't remember. but somehow we knew who she was and we liked her. But
isn't her first rodeo. She's done stuff.
No, yeah. So somewhere
the name was familiar to me when they announced it originally. Yeah.
Right, but I wanted to think, was it the Girl and the Spider, whatever that, but that was after. So it's like,
man.
Anyway, we wanted to see her and we liked her in it. And but also one of the things that kept us watching for the two seasons was there was some history in it that we didn't know. And that was interesting. So we didn't, when she was gone, we didn't watch the new season, even though the gal playing the queen now, what's it, Coleman?
Olivia Coleman. Yeah.
Yeah. She's fantastic. And we do like
absolutely
her.
Absolutely a world treasure. Yeah.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, it just didn't interest us to keep watching.
Which is what my sister did too.
Yeah. Well, and also you mentioned the whole thing about they were going to start covering things in history that we already knew.
Damn.
So so the thing that made us decide to watch the last two seasons was we were kind of interested in seeing Gillian Anderson's portrayal of Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, yeah.
So we went ahead and we watched both seasons. But again, not only were there great performances, great scripts, great cinematography, great direction, great performances, but there were also some historical things that neither one of us had remembered. Cool. Even though a lot of it took place when we were, you know, when we were growing up, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's, even if you don't really care about the royals, and I still don't, in fact, I probably care even less because they're not very sympathetically portrayed, I don't think.
I'm betting it came off as a bit soap operatic.
Well,
and that's freaky because it's actual real people.
Yeah, the problem with it, I think, I mean, maybe other people don't get this impression, and it's only me or people like me, is there's a lot of everyone's miserable, right? And they complain about how terrible their life is. But of course, nobody leaves it, right? They don't like say, you know what, I'm just going to be an ordinary person and live an ordinary life because that's, you know, that's what I long for, the freedom that people who aren't royals. No, it's kind of hard to feel sorry for the, I mean, some of the things they have to deal with truly do seem terrible, but they are the price you pay for a lot of pretty good things that they don't want to give up. So it's like, you kind of want to say, well, either put your money where your mouth is and leave the whole situation or shut up because... I mean, there are people who are suffering really as much as you are.
Right. Right.
They're poor, you know?
I know, because you can argue that Prince Harry has left, although he left with millions and millions of dollars. So, you know, whatever. But there's also a lot of things you could do to pull back from it a little bit.
Yeah.
While still, like, yeah, no, it's.
I mean, it's just hard.
Rings disingenuous, except that, you know, they know no other situation. So, you know, their perspective is different. We can see this from the outside.
Sure. Know. But don't you think that a person, when they reach a certain level of adulthood could say, well, I don't like this, but look at the good that is in my life. I could maybe if I felt some gratitude, that would counteract some of the things. Absolutely. I don't like.
And I'll bet some of them did. Keep in mind, you're raised to be like, you have to do this. This is like you are going to be taken care of to such a ridiculous degree and you will want for nothing. But the one thing you can't do is stop being this. Yeah. It's your one burden. And so you're raised to think that, and you can't stop because it would ruin everything. If you're raised to think that, and on top of that, let's be honest, spoiled as shit.
Yeah.
It makes sense that you would want to rail against the one thing you were told you can't do.
Yeah, I suppose.
Even if you never would have the guts to leave the rest of it behind to do it. You'd still be like, leave my family.
But also, I mean, this is fictional. I don't know what these people are really like, you know. No, I don't know.
And we never will know. Yeah.
So I don't
really. Apparently, they were really mad when season 3 of The Crown was coming out because they knew what it was going to deal with and they were not happy about that. And then it came out and they were like, oh, no, we're fine. So apparently whatever they were worried about, not in there.
Wow. Well,
I suspect there are so many conspiracy theories revolving around Diana's death. I suspect they probably were worried that it would give credence to some of those.
Oh, well, I mean,
there are so many weird conspiracies about Diana.
They didn't really, I mean, the show, the fourth season stops, you know, they're not divorced or anything yet or anything like that. So it's like,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's why they weren't worried. Maybe they didn't realize it wasn't going to go far enough yet.
Yeah,
maybe it hadn't. Season five's the one they'll hate.
Maybe. But I think it's worth watching just for the craft of it. It's just so well crafted. And if you don't take it too seriously as history, which I don't, and I don't really care about the royals anyway, it's just the acting is so good and the scripts are so good. And I can't tell you how many times there was a shot, you know, and the way it was put together, I'm just like, wow, that's just really good direction. I don't know. I think it's good TV. I think it's worth watching.
If I watched it, I would enjoy it.
I think you would.
I mean, there's so much TV that falls under that category. It's more than I'll ever get to.
Oh, you know.
I have to start ranking them based on any active interest I have, and I just don't. Trish said she really wanted to watch it, wanted me to watch it with her. I would totally watch it.
Who's really good in it is... shoot. I hate it when I blank out on names. You know,
who did they play?
Princess Margaret.
Oh, I don't know.
Carol
Kane.
No, Danny Elfman's was she married to him?
Jenna.
Well, she's in all this stuff.
Herman Greg lady.
What?
She was married to Jenna Elfman.
No, I don't know if she was ever married to him. She's just in all his stuff. She was
Helena
in...
Bonham Carter. And yes. You don't mean Danny Elfman. You mean Tim Burton.
Yeah, Tim Burton. Sorry.
Danny Elfman's in every Tim Burton thing also.
Right.
I think they were married for a little while. I don't think they are now.
I hate how my brain works sometimes. But yes, her. I've seen her
just
a lot of things.
Saying something. Hold on. What?
I said Tim Burton and Danny Elfman.
Yes, Tim Burton and Danny Elfman are married. In fact,
that
it's
would
not
explain
appropriate.
A lot.
We're supposed to call him Tim Elfman now.
No, but anyway.
Like legally, that's what
Bonham Carter, yes. I've seen her in things and she's always good and whatever.
But she's marvelous. She's marvelous. She also picks a bunch of bullshit to be in. She's Anthony Hopkins. She's an incredible actor, and almost everything she's in, I hate. Not because she's bad at acting. She's just really bad at picking stuff.
She was really good in this. And the funny thing is, the actor who played her in the first two seasons was also kind of stole the show. I forget her name.
Rip Torn.
No. She was, yeah, that's who it was.
Just transformed. Like, kudos to the costuming and makeup, because just completely transformed.
Anyway,
Princess Margaret.
I do not know why my brain can't function about talking about all this stuff. But
you're
anyway,
still thinking about those zombies in the alleyway.
Probably on some level, I'm still working that through. No, but I think it's good TV. And I mean, it might not be your cup of tea, but I can't. No pun intended. But cool. I think that most people who can appreciate.
How did you not see before that train wreck happened? Come on.
I think most
there's
people,
no excuse for not seeing that coming.
I think most people who can appreciate the craft of, you know, visual arts or movies or TV would, I think they'd have to like it because it's so good. It's just really good.
It makes sense to me. William, we finished The Haunting of Bly Manor.
Oh, did you?
We did.
Yeah. How was it?
You should be excited because you didn't talk about it when you finished it because you wanted to wait for me to finish it.
That's right.
So here we are.
Yeah.
I get in trouble with saying what Trish thought. I'm going to avoid that.
Okay.
I will say, I believe, and she's sitting here so she can gainsay me on this, I believe she and I largely felt the same about it. Mm. And gun to my head, I'm going to say she maybe disliked it a little more than I did or didn't like it as well as I did.
Okay.
But it's close. When we talked about it afterwards, we largely seemed to agree in our assessment, which was very much not like it as much as Hill House.
Yeah.
Most people I've run into have not felt that way that I've spoken to.
Really?
They've said they're very different, but they love them both. And I agree, they are very different, although not in some ways. They were paced and diagrammed out in very similar ways.
You're right, they really were, yep.
I have two reasons that are sort of similar why I didn't particularly like it. And I think I can speak to them in a relatively spoiler-free manner.
Okay.
The short version I give is, in terms of narrative paradigms, Haunting of Hill House was man versus nature. Haunting of Bly Manor is man versus man. And what I mean is, ultimately, in Hill House, the bad thing was the house. And the house was bad on some sort of deep metaphysical level. In Bly Manor, ultimately, there is nothing about the house that did anything.
Right.
Bly Manor is largely people doing shitty things, and then those people and other people who didn't do shitty things suffering horrible consequences for it. And that's no fun for me. We talked about this. It's very weird. There's not a lot of character sympathy in Bly Manor. In Hill House, every single character was an absolute asshole. And by the end of that show, I cared for all of them. That did not happen in Bly Manor. I still hate all but a small handful of them, and even those I feel weird about. I will also say the climax to the and the resolution felt unbelievably tacked on. Not that they don't make sense, but in no way. If you watch Hill House, you can see it leading to the climax. You can't see that coming in this one. There are reference points, but there's no way you'd guess how it was going to go. It really felt like they just sort of made it up on the fly. And there are some subplots that sort of have no business being there. This is getting more tricky, but I'll put this to you. The uncle's plotline, two things about it. One, there's a very strong resemblance to a lot of other people's plotlines. And two, it has nothing to do with those other plotlines.
Right.
Once I realized that after the fact, I was like kind of angry.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is some bullshit here.
Yeah. Why even?
It all matched sort of thematically, but then later I was like, it had nothing. It really, no.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that annoyed me. Yeah. And there's just a lot of shitty people in it. And don't like that. And there was no redemption arc. Nobody had a redemption arc. Except maybe, again, the uncle had his own storyline that really didn't have to do with the rest. Nobody else got a redemption arc. Everyone in Hill House got a redemption arc. Everybody got to realize their problems and be better, or they got to sacrifice themselves or something. Nobody really got that in Bly. The closest you got was actually the least shitty person. They kind of got to redeem themselves at the end, even though they had nothing to redeem themselves for. So yeah, it was beautifully done. I got to the point where I really liked the ensemble. I liked those characters together. That was nice. Yeah, I didn't like it. How about you? You seem to be agreeing with a lot of things I'm saying, but what's your take?
I pretty much agree with everything you're saying. I don't know that it's really, at the end of the day, it's not perfectly fair to compare them, because I don't think when they sat down to do Bly Manor, they thought in any shape, any except for what you just said, there are beats in the story that are like identical. like they really use the same skeleton for sure.
And the way in which they disseminate information.
Yeah, very similar.
Which is why I told Trish, I'm like, I'll bet in the second to last episode, we're suddenly going to get all the exposition in the world.
That's right. That kind of thing. But outside of that, outside of the scaffolding, if you will, which was, it was almost annoying how the same it was. Everything else was from scratch, ground up. I mean, they were truer to the source material. Like you just pointed out, they didn't really worry about making the house a character in the story. You know, they didn't really try to make it like Hill House in any other way except that scaffolding. And so to compare them and to expect that you're going to have the same experience, that's just not really reasonable. Although I prefer the experience that Hill House made versus the experience, even if I'd gotten into Bly Manor the way they wanted me to, I wouldn't have had the experience that I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted something more like Hill House.
And I don't know that I'll go so far as to saying don't watch Bly Manor. It's good in itself. It also suffers from a little bit of Weeping Angel syndrome. Again, Hill House's explanation was very simple and very opaque. We didn't get a lot of details. We got a lot of details in how shit worked in Bly Manor, which means I notice a lot of inconsistencies in how shit's supposed to work.
Yeah, that's right.
Not the least of which is how long it takes to kill somebody by dragging them around by the neck. But that I give a little bit of narrative license to. Really, just such a fascinating range of time, how long that takes for someone to die.
I think it's a one thing I like about haunted house stories in general is that you don't need more explanation than that the house is haunted, right? Yeah. Weird stuff happens, irrational, illogical, nothing follows any rules. How can that be? The house is haunted. That is the explanation. That's all the explanation you need.
Yeah.
And I like that about haunted house stories. As soon as you get away from, I mean, it's called The Haunting of Bly Manor, but as you pointed out, the house doesn't have really anything to do with it. And so then you start to,
haunting happens.
Yeah. But then the haunting itself becomes a thing that has to have rules and they have to be explained.
Suffice it to say, if the same things that happened at Bly Manor happened, you know, at Joe's Crab Shack, Joe's Crab Shack would have been haunted in the way Bly Manor was haunted. So there's nothing special about Bly Manor.
Right.
Also, so, don't go to Joe's Crab Shack. I hear it's haunted.
Incidentally, when you were talking about the uncle's plot line kind of being oddly sort of orphaned or whatever.
The same, but completely unrelated. Yeah.
That's a thing that you typically find in American Horror Story. They'll do that kind of stuff, but it fits with them. I mean, because you expect it. You expect there's going to be little things here and there. Like I forgot to mention this, but we finally saw American Horror Story 1984.
Oh, yeah.
And it was not as bad as we thought it was. It was not good, but it was not as bad as
And not as good as the original with John Gielgud.
What?
1984, come on.
Oh, okay, well,
I love the idea that American Horror Story 1984 is just a remake of 1984.
Well, when I first heard that they were going to do this and it was going to be a camp, a slasher, you know, a riffing on slashers, I knew it was going to be the most boring one because slashers are so boring to me. I don't care about that. But it was, since it was American Horror Story, they did more than just that. And so it was actually better than I thought it was going to be. It was still probably
You can get meta and make slashers some interesting, but it's still limited. It's not a deep well.
But American
Slashers Horror Story, are not a deep well.
Yeah, no. But American Horror Story always has these orphaned arcs, yeah, plot lines and stuff. But in American Horror Story, it's part of it. Like, they're just trying
to cram herons, essentially.
No, it's just, they're just trying to put as much stuff into it, right?
I mean, again, I would be fine with it if the show wasn't so clearly trying to tell me this is the same shit that's going on with everyone else.
Right, 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 right. That's right.
Like, so hard. I was like, we're going to find out some shit. And I'm like, oh no, we didn't find out some shit. And in fact, to that degree, it makes the whole character not make good sense to me.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Given what I now know, I'm like, all of his behavior is weird.
Yeah, I agree. It felt like, well, I won't give anything away.
It has given me some new actors to keep track of. There are some people in this I really like. The actor who played Hannah, the actor who played Owen, the girl who played Flora. Man, I hope she sticks with acting. I cannot wait to see more of her career.
Yeah, really good.
They had great performances, and I look forward to seeing them in other things. But yeah, it's disappointing. Yeah. You want a good, spooky, supernatural shit, people? Watch Diablero on Netflix. It's good stuff. I'm enjoying it a lot.
I don't know why I like American Horror Story just as a general thing. I mean, it's hit or miss, but I like the idea of it. And when they get it right, they get it really right, it seems to me. And I don't mind when they miss because I appreciate the effort. Sort of. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I do like it. I don't know why. Even when it's horror, not good, I like it.
In general, horror series that are genuinely meant to be like scary,
yeah,
I often shy away from, because first of all, I don't feel like I can sustain feeling.
Mm.
Like, that's a scary movie is, you know, 1 to 2 hours of me being tense and scared and things happen and stuff like that. And when it's a TV show, like, oh, each week I got to remember how I got to get back that pseudo adrenaline vibe.
Right, right, right.
And also, because horror movie plots tend to be fairly straightforward, easy things, too often if you put it into a TV show, you get a lot of filler.
Yeah, sometimes that's true.
And you don't have to. And there are exceptions, and I feel like Ryan Murphy is probably doing well. We were very turned off by the first series and haven't gone back. We only got halfway through. We got as far as the gimp suit rape scene in the first season.
Yeah.
Then we bailed. Not because I tend to leave things when there's a rape scene, but because at that point it was like, none of this makes sense. None of this is interesting. And a lot of this is really bothersome. I went back to read what the plot was. And actually, like, right after we stopped watching, they drew the plot lines together in a very interesting way.
Yeah, they did.
No, it was half a season too late.
I mean, I don't think they've ever had a season that's as good as The Murder House, but some of them are pretty good. I mean, I think the reason I like them is because I think even when they miss, I feel like they get it. I mean, I feel like they understand that horror isn't just about titillating people or gore or whatever. In, you know, the 1984 season with the slasher thing notwithstanding, there's like, there are some existential things going on that make things dreadful or horrible, and they get it, that I think most of the time, and I really appreciate that. It's not just a lurid thing, you know. Cerebral about it.
I don't want to give Ryan Murphy credit for understanding everything in the world.
Well, because
it seems unlikely. Ryan Murphy very clearly is good at picking people who he knows have good vision.
Yeah, I don't know who's responsible for making it good.
His stuff, the shows that he is in charge of really are good at hitting at whatever it is they're sort of hitting at. Even Glee, I think, got its vibe down. I was not remotely interested in that vibe, but it really did. Pose is an absolute phenomenon. I'm not about to say that Ryan Murphy really understands what, like, homeless trans people of color were dealing with in the 80s. But he knows how to find people who do and give them enough resources that they can make that real. And I think the horror is a similar thing. He knows how to find people because it's tricky to say anything new in horror. But you kind of need to if you're going to do 9 seasons of a series on horror.
Well, but that's just it. There's nothing new in it. Every single season is, oh, here's something you like in horror. Now we're going to do that.
Oh.
But I mean, like the when they did the season in the asylum, you know, there was some interesting things about, you know, mental health. When they did the thing about Freak Show, there were some interesting things about how those people were marginalized, you know. So it's
See, and to me, that's the new component, because most horror dealing with those topics doesn't have that. I personally can speak to Asylum and Freak Show type horror movies definitely don't deal with these issues.
Oh yeah, they're just exploitative, you mean. They're just exploiting
spectacle entirely. Yeah. I think getting to that, and like when I talked about the Behind the Mask, the Rise of Leslie Vernon a while ago, which was that mockumentary about an upcoming supernatural murderer, it really did deal with that kind of thing. Like, if you had, what do you think actually would motivate Michael Myers and shit like that? Because in the horror movies, they're just evil.
So it played
with the, like, what do you think's going on there? And that was fun, and that was new.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah,
I get the sense that American Horror Story does that.
Yeah. Mostly. I mean, again, sometimes it misses, but you know, other times it's like, okay, yeah, this is interesting. I like how they're not just trying to come up with things to gross you out or make you feel creepy or whatever. They're trying to tie it to something deeper on a social or cultural or existential level, you know, to give it some substance and depth. It doesn't always work, but I really do appreciate the effort, and it's kind of fun to watch.
Interesting and not just a nostalgia cash grab.
Yeah. I just really respect what they're trying to do, and then when they achieve it, it's pretty cool to me. But
speaking of nostalgia cash grabs, the new season of Animaniacs is on Hulu, just so everybody knows. Go ahead and watch it. See what you think. I have all sorts of different feelings about it. I mean, that's what it says on the tin. I mean, you liked what happened in Animaniacs. It's more of that happening. So, you know? I mean, I think we're already way over time, but we should probably draw a question because it's Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's Thanksgiving.
And I'm thankful that our listeners write in and give us these questions. This has not been a very Thanksgiving-y episode. All right, I take it back. It's from Azure Talent. I am not thankful. Nope. Well, somebody was reading the We Rate Dogs Twitter feed when they wrote this. Heckin' good boys. And boys is spelled B-O-I-S, in case we were wondering. Now, this could be confusing when read aloud, so I'm going to say it here. EP, he's not talking Tony Parsons. He means toilet paper.
Oh.
EP, fold, wad, or both, depending on situation. Oh, I bet you love this question. This is right up your alley. No pun intended. Fuck off. I'm proud of that one. I am proud of that one. That might be a new title. New title episode, right up your alley.
Great.
Hey, at least I'm not saying right up Williams' alley. Anyway.
Yeah, don't say that.
You want to field this one? Oh, go ahead.
I don't.
Here, let me answer first, and I think I can answer in a way that might give you some wiggle room to not feel as weird about answering this.
Okay, I mean, it's not just feeling weird about answering. That's true.
But also, I also trying to think about it. And like,
yeah, I don't know if. Yeah, do I? I can't.
Mine's very straightforward, and it's not just toilet paper. I would say it is all paper products of that nature, napkins, paper towels, and stuff. I'm always wad. I like, this isn't why I do it, which is why I don't actually know if this is true, but I think science is a little bit on my side. There's a thing where, like, if you crumple it up, it makes spaces or whatever, and so it's more absorbent potentially than fold. Just if I fold it, it always feels very thin and flimsy. Whereas if you wad it, the same thing with, like, if I'm cleaning up a mess with a paper towel or whatever, if it's something very straightforward and liquid, I might fold it. In general, no, you wad it up and you do that. And that's, you know, that's not the motion, obviously, but that's what I do with my toilet paper.
I've always thought of that.
The only people I've known to fold are women, and women have a whole extra level of stuff they have to deal with in their ablutions. I won't go into detail, but I mean, I understand that. I've always been one. Always.
I've never really thought of that, even in relation, like you said, to like wiping a spill up off of a counter or something. I never even thought of that. But I think, I don't know. I don't really think about it. So
I mean, this is important, because if people are watching this on Thanksgiving, pretty soon, in a few hours, this is going to be an issue for a lot of them.
So
my hope is that this question really gets in their heads, and they end up like stuck on the toilet because they don't know what they're going to do. Suddenly they've thought about it and they're like, shit, what do I do? All of it feels weird now. Like,
yeah, I'm a little afraid the next time I'm using the bathroom, I'll get analysis paralysis while I was like, wait a minute, what am I supposed to do?
Whereas I'm weird enough that I already have, like, in the past, like over the years, paid attention. So like, I know exactly, like the muscle memory is there. And even if I think about it, I know what I'm doing. For some reason, I've actually, like, why do I do it this way?
Do you think it's possible for a person to not have a particular pattern of it? Like, they just sometimes will do one thing or sometimes the other or sometimes.
It feels unlikely because, again, the muscle memory thing. You're not thinking about it when you go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And so the idea that you're not thinking about it and your brain has two different or even more patterns seems unlikely. Most likely you do it essentially the same every time.
Okay, but what about this though? What if you don't always, for whatever reason, you're not always using the same brand?
Chills hearing you just start this sentence. I'm like, William's about to say something I never would have thought William would say. I don't know what it is, but I know he's about to say stuff I never would have thought he would say. We're getting deep into toilet talk here. I'm kind of
impressed. No, but what happens? What if you don't always, you're not always using the same brand of toilet paper?
I can answer that. Because unlike most people in the world, in my 43 years, I have used more than one kind of toilet paper. I know most of you, you know, middle of the grave, sick. No, I can. Again, because I actually think about stuff. For in that case, the amount varies. The process stays the same. Because again, I'm going for an approximate level of presumed absorbs, approximate level of fluffiness, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
So depending on the brand, how much that requires changes. What I do with it's the same.
Because you know, the toilet paper that's very paper like versus toilet paper that's very cloth like, that's a huge difference in, you know, performance, if you will. So it's like,
I will, the amount measured in length can be a factor of three.
Yeah.
between them, to me, at least.
I hear you.
Ezra Allen does hit on something. I can't believe we're getting this much out of this question. And not just because of you. I can't believe I'm getting this much out of this question. Ezra Allen does hit on something, though, depending on the situation. And I definitely, some things are different in different, because we know the experience is not always the same. And sometimes, by necessity, you have to have a different game plan, as it were. But that game plan never has me switching from WAD to fold. I make it sound like I'm like, I have like a, like ethical reason, moral reasons. I don't. I'm just saying, I've never done that, and it doesn't, I don't think it would be good. I'm not opposed to people who do. I don't think you should be ashamed. I'm not mad at you. But never done it. Like maybe like in my whole life.
Different situations. That's funny. Huh. I don't know. So never really thought about
you've
it.
You've actually answered. You don't know, really. I mean, pay attention and next week we'll ask you.
No, nope. If I have it figured out next week and you ask me, I'm just not going to answer yet.
Journal. This week I want you to do some journaling.
No. Nope. I just don't think I really don't pay attention. I don't think that I can't say.
We'll plot it out on the graph. Okay. Can I ask you next week if you now know? You don't have to tell us. But.
I guess if you want. I might know.
Get a little edification for knowing that you have learned something about yourself. So,
oh, yeah, that's really important to know.
I mean, if you're in a dead-end alley and you've only got a little left on the roll and, you know, the zombies are showing up and you got to know, fold or what? You got to pick quick. No, this is unlike the earlier one. I feel like this is a genuine situation that we need to prepare for, and which is why I'm not expecting a quick answer, because the stakes here are much higher.
Much higher, yeah.
Much higher.
Really should think it through. Yeah.
Like, I would have already saved one roll to take care of myself.
I definitely would have a spare roll. I can't even imagine also, not having a spare roll.
Also, straight up from this day forward, I'm going to refer to running out of toilet paper as being out of ammo. No question.
Yep, that's a good one. Or when if the toilet paper runs out of the supermarket, there was a run on ammo and now they're
there out. We go. Yeah.
That's a good one. I like that.
What's the gun? No, you know, thinking it too far.
Yeah,
we don't. We're going, yeah, never mind. Never mind.
Good work. Never mind. That's
going
yep.
down fighting. Going down fighting. God damn it. I mean, that has to be the title. It's the best. I'm saying it. It has asserted itself.
Yeah.
It has to be the title. That's what we're going to call it. I mean, I really hope this has improved y'all's Thanksgiving. And in Craig's case, I mean, have a good week, whatever.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I really want someone on Thanksgiving someday to get their family gathered around and have them listen and watch, in this case, the podcast.
Do you think Thanksgiving,
yeah, you put it up on the TV?
Do you think Thanksgiving is more meaningful to Craig because he's listened to 10 of these after he's listened to 10 of these now?
Oh.
Or is it still just a holiday that the Americans have that he doesn't care about?
This is a question. Craig, go to the blog and tell us, how has specifically our podcast changed your views, if at all, your feelings about American Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I'm interested to know that.
I am prepared. In fact, I'm going to say there's like a 40% chance the answer is going to be not at all.
Yeah.
and we'll accept that, Craig, if that is the answer. No, I want to give a good area of like negligible.
Okay.
I want to give that. I figure there's a solid 40% chance. Not at all. I don't even know why you would say that.
Yeah.
And we'll accept that, but I am curious what the real answer is. So figure that out. And yeah, I'm going to have a longer stretch here, but I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. Are you staying? You're staying home.
Yes.
Yeah, we are too. We're going to connect via Zoom with some family members and probably play some games. We're still having the meal because said, and I think rightfully so, more so than like Christmas and stuff. Thanksgiving is about having a big old meal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know we can get all fancy, but that's what it's about. You get together, you eat a shit ton. So she's making a bunch of stuff. And what I love is she's like, here are the things I need to have for it to feel like Thanksgiving. What are the things you need to have? And I only had three things.
Three things. Wow.
Well, four, I guess, because gravy, but it was never not going to involve gravy. She said up front, she's like, there's going to be gravy.
It was never not going to involve gravy.
No. Awesome. I said stuffing. I really do like stuffing. And I was like, it could just be stovetop if you want, but stuffing. Well, she did the shopping. She's making real stuffing. Like, I saw it. She bought the stuff. Then broccoli rice casserole, which is a thing her mother makes. And I said, like, I really like it. I don't need it. And especially if she's not interested, which it turned out she's not. I'm like, that's fine. She went and bought the stuff today anyway. She's going to make it for me.
Oh, that's nice.
Very sweet. The third thing, of course, pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
Pumpkin pie. And it's the thing. Here's the thing. She doesn't like it.
Oh.
As far as I know, the cats don't. it's just me. And I was, and she was like, do you want me to make it? I'm like, no, just buy one. And I had been at Ivy last week and they have like half pies and I didn't see a pumpkin one. I'm like, they have like half ones in a clamshell container. Let's get that. Like, I don't need, you know. Well, she couldn't find one of those. So she got a whole pie. And it's a big whole pie. Like, it's at least a 10-inch diameter. It is all for me. And I have confirmed that I don't have to wait till Thanksgiving Day. So, I mean, it's going to be a good week. I mean, by this point, it will have been a good week. But, you know,
yeah,
not for my blood sugar, but for the rest of me. It's going to be a good week.
We're going to have a big meal, too. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. And yeah, we're arranging, playing some games online and stuff like that.
Good.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased. The person that I didn't even ask if they were going to see anyone Thanksgiving, because I knew they weren't, because they are comfortably the person who has been most concerned about coronavirus. Like, they were isolating when we were all still making fun of them. Very serious. And so instead I said, how did your family take it when you said you weren't coming for Thanksgiving? Well, jokes on me. Turns out the family's coming to them.
Oh.
But her parents are coming. And then later his parents are coming. But they are required to observe a strict 14-day isolation before they come.
Oh.
And I was surprised because what I knew of this person's parents is that they weren't taking COVID that seriously. So right. I was surprised they'd be willing to do this. And then I remembered my friend recently gave birth for the first time. And because of COVID, has not allowed these crazy people who don't take it serious to come and see their grandkid.
Oh.
So they're willing to quarantine for 2 weeks, show up because they haven't yet seen this grandkid. So it all makes sense, and I think it's good. I'm happy that they're going to be able to do that and that they were willing. My friend don't take no shit. She was like, no, you will have to do that. Like, not going to compromise on this one. So.
Well, I'm glad that works out. I mean, like, yeah. I have, when we drive home, you know, 100 miles, we've got to stop and get gas. I mean, we couldn't do that. We couldn't quarantine.
Well, that was the trick. They filled up the gas, they filled up the car before they went into quarantine, specifically for that reason.
Right.
But they ran out of chips.
Yeah, they also stocked up on their food, but they ran out of chips 5.5 days in.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, if you can do that, if you can do the 14-day thing and then go right to the place without stopping anywhere, that would be cool. We can't do that, so.
I don't know. I mean, not that I give a shit about the holiday. I always feel like holidays are a thing that makes visiting your family that much more stressful. I don't find that useful. Because people were, and it's stressful in some of it. Are you giving the right gifts, or is the food going to be right? When are we going to, like, just little things. It's not a lot of stress, but it's just that much more. And I'm like, why would you want that on the rare times you get to see your family? But even outside of that, I keep being like, this is 1 year. Yeah. Unless you've got one of those, oh, it's grandma's last Christmas things. Let's be honest, those are always a lie. Every time somebody says it's grandma's last Christmas the first time, there's at least 3 years before grandma kicks it. I am not kidding. Literally every person I've ever known who's like, this will be grandma's last Christmas. It was never grandma's last Christmas that first time. Never. So I'm like, you know what? Take a year off. Whatever. And I mean, I'm really extending this episode too long, but I do want to say, as of a few hours ago, or in your guys' case, 3 days and a few hours ago, my wife is now a director.
Really?
No longer a senior manager. She is, in fact, a director.
Wow.
And this is awesome and good on her. But more than that, this is about fucking time.
Right.
And I'll tell you why. Yeah. It's not just because my wife's awesome and that's how it goes. For quite a while now, all of her contemporaries in her entire vision do essentially the same job she does, including her direct like counterparts, but all of them at all the various teams in the thing are all directors or above.
Yeah.
She's the only one. And some of them are a lot newer. I mean, I'm a little biased, but a lot of them are way less useful and effective and important. And she was literally, and we're talking about 20, 30 people. She was the only one. So yep. It's been insane. Also, got a raise. So it just that much more means I'll not have to get a job. Mostly. No, I had to tell her because I didn't want to make her feel bad. So I never pushed it too hard, but I'm like, it was furious for years they didn't do that for you.
Yeah,
like, and now I can be really open about that. Like, it pissed me off because she deserves it. She is, I don't really understand her job, but I know she's really good at it because everybody else who works with her says she's really good at it.
Yeah, I know just what you're talking about. Well, congratulations to her. I'm glad it finally happened for her.
She just texts me. I'm out in the bed. She's like, can you come back to the bedroom? And I came back and I'm like, and she's very serious. I'm like, what's happening? She's like, I want to let you know. I'm a director now. I'm like, ah!
That's very cool.
So that is good. All right. If we were doing this appropriately, we would end this episode by going down fighting. I mean, first of all, we've established we probably wouldn't. And also, I have no idea what that means in this context. So I'm just going to say bye. Bye, everybody.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.